So up to last week's sermon, through 8 different occasions, we have looked at Abraham, who was a true follower of God and God's goal. It is known that the Bible is the letter from God that reveals His heart to us. And this letter is explained in terms of history of the land. Therefore, depending on how one questions and conceives the Bible, the meaning and the interpretation of it will differ. So through our approach of looking at different characters from the history, God wanted us to extract several points. So we'll be looking at the story of Jacob and Esau today, and Isaac, which comes after Abraham. So there are several points that God wants us to extract from these stories. And those questions are how God wants us to perceive Him as, and how He works in our lives, and what are these individual stories saying about the faith, and what does it mean to live by faith? Most importantly, in order to correctly and genuinely understand the Bible and the history that flows from it, we need to have a correct understanding of who God truly is and how He actually works. So we can see that this is imperative, because this is a key to differentiate Christianity from many other unorthodox religions, such as heresy. So we'll continue to look at the history in order to fully understand God's message for us. So we know that God is the creator of all things, heaven and earth, and we know Him as the God who granted humans with the free will, which allow us to form relationships with Him. This is precisely the reason why God didn't intervene when Adam and Eve committed sins by eating the fruit of knowledge, even though God knew their intentions all along. The sinful nature of humans has led to regrettable consequences, which made us fear God and made it inevitable for us to stray ourselves from the path of God and rather to the path of hell. Nevertheless, as evinced by the history, we're able to witness that God has continued to save His people from the path of death, despite God's gracious mercifulness due to continuous commitment of sins by humans. God has wiped out the generation with flood. However, we're able to witness that God is a merciful God who granted us with a new life and chance by saving Noah, who listened, trusted, and obeyed God's words. Unfortunately, through the story of Tower of Babel, we're able to see people betraying God and His words by doing whatever they were pleased, not what God was pleased. Through the history, we know that God again paved the path for us, which led us from the dead to life, by seeking out those who were willing to listen and be faithful to Him. He could have been very disappointed on us, but He never gave up on us. He wants us to be part of His journey. So by looking at the history, we know that God is a mighty and omnipresent, but He doesn't use or work with people who try to accomplish with their feeble and shaky strength. It is definitely evident that people have the free will and the freedom to make individual choices and the ability to act freely. People abuse this, though, by trying to predestine their lives and their own paths by unreasonably picking and forcing them to align themselves with the characters' lives in the Bible. However, God doesn't work that way. The way it works is He first invites us or calls on us. And it is when we react to His calling, like how Abraham did, like how Isaac did, He then tells and instructs us what He wants to do with their lives. So this is going to be the main theme of today's sermon: the process of how He works by calling on us, and after He calls on us, and it depends on how you react to His calling, He would determine whether to use us or not. So what it means for Him to give us the free will is exactly what we've been talking about, that He calls on us and He gives us a free will to whether to respond to His calling or not. So it would be a mistake to think that He's in control in every single little part of our lives. Rather, He gives us that free will. in conclusion, we shouldn't miscomprehend this messy history by thinking that God was not present throughout the history, as this is not true. God just decided to create a system where humans' free will exists. This doesn't mean that God's plan is being prevented. Even though people tend to complicate the history, God will have his way and he will achieve his overall objective at the end. So we must correctly remember God's methods in terms of how he works by remembering what Abraham did in his life. Firstly, God called Abraham. Secondly, Abraham reacted to God's calling by living faithfully to God's words. Thirdly, God was able to work with Abraham in spreading the gospel. From this, we know that God didn't intervene with every little event in Abraham's life, but rather he used Abraham to make others live faithfully by believing in his promise. Although there were bumps along the way, such as an incident of Ishmael, God allowed Abraham to pick himself up to continue to live faithfully. So a must remember point is that God works when we react to his calling with a faithful mind and heart. God doesn't use his almighty power to change us when we act indifferently towards his calling. That's just not how it works. To be honest, we might be completely helpless and incompetent in terms of having skills and knowledge, but regardless of our helplessness, God will continue to use us like how God used Abraham, as long as we believe in him and pursue towards his calling. So we can only know the God's path and his true purpose when we open up our hearts to his calling through faith. This is the only way we can understand God's purpose. And this is a key to living a faithful life. Just like Abraham, we can make mistakes and we can fail at times in our lives. However, at the end, we're able to pick ourselves up from this mess and form an intimate relationship or close friendship with God, as long as we know his true intention, purpose, and heart. If we're able to do this, then we can live a mature, faithful life that resembles Abraham's prompt and unhesitant action to obey God when God asked him to sacrifice his son. In the end, even though we are helpless and lacking, when we try to live the faithful life, God will call us as his friend, just like how he called Abraham his friend. So, through today's sermon, we'll continue to learn God's true heart and his purpose by looking at the story of Isaac and Jacob, who came after Abraham. So let us just remember all the points that the pastor mentioned before delving into the story of Isaac and the story of his sons, Jacob and Esau. So if we look at chapter 25, verses 19 through 34, we can see that it starts off as Isaac's genealogy, but it can really be seen as Jacob's story, which signifies the beginning of Israel's ethnicity. Abraham's son is clearly Isaac, but the story seems to introduce Isaac as a character within Jacob's story. Isaac is mentioned towards the end of chapter 25, while Jacob's story continues towards almost the end of Genesis. So the Bible introduces us to Jacob in chapter 25, verses 19 to 34, which will help us in understanding God's message for us throughout the various historical stories. So it starts off with the story of Isaac, but then we're really trying to look at what God's message is for us today through the story of Jacob. So we know that God has chosen Abraham because God wanted the next generation to continue the faith that Abraham had, which was to believe in God's promise for us. Therefore, the stories of Isaac and Jacob can be treated as indications of how the next generation is carrying forward the Abraham's faith. In a way, these stories can resemble as our stories, because technically, we're all considered as a later generation of Varian. An important point to note here is that as we observe the story of Jacob and Esau, it is imperative for us to read this with a discerning eye. In other words, in order to avoid any confusions, we need to have a proper perspective of looking at this particular story. Therefore, chapter 25 is a good guideline that sort of works as a preliminary introduction that helps us avoid any confusions or confrontations that we may encounter in later chapters. Thus, we must have two questions in back of our mind as we read chapter 25. First, what kinds of characters are Esau and Jacob? Second, how does God work? And we were able to answer those two questions. We get a better sense of those two questions as we look at the stories of Esau and Jacob today. So chapter 25, verse 19 tells us that Isaac marries Rebecca at age 40. And it's only 20 years later, at age 60, when Rebecca and Isaac have their twin sons, Jacob and Esau. During the pregnancy stage, Rebecca prayed to God for help because the babies jostled each other too much in their womb. God responds with the following on chapter 25, verse 23. The Lord said to her, "Two nations are in your womb. Two nations are in your womb, and two people from within you will be separated. One people will be stronger than the other, and the older will serve the younger." Look, Rebecca prayed because she was going through so much pain during her pregnancy. But that's all that Lord had said to her. So after this, Jacob came out after Esau. So that would make Jacob the younger brother, with his hand grasping onto Esau's heel. So he was named Jacob. So it is likely that this verse is just focusing on their leader, Jacob, just over-exaggerating on the birth of Jacob to signify his greatness. Now, this is one of the areas I had mentioned earlier where it could massively confuse us, or where we can easily misunderstand the true message. We have to understand here that God is an unbiased God. However, this verse suggests as if God has already predestined the entire future history of Jacob, and which leads us to perceive the story as if God will bless the one who is deceitful and malicious as long as he or she receives God's blessing from the very beginning of his or her life. However, we have to understand that the Bible puts emphasis on Jacob because it was a very common practice back then to over-exaggerate the birth of their iconic leader or ancestor, which was exactly what the Israel nation did on Jacob. So a must-remember point here is that God is an unbiased God, and then he's not showing favoritism to Jacob or anything like that, but rather it was just very common practice back then to have the tendency to over-exaggerate on the birth of their iconic leaders. So furthermore, people use similar verses from the Bible, such as chapter 1, verse 1 through 3, from the book of Malachi, to make a false assumption that God has predestined everything about the person before he or she was given birth, and think that God's choice is unconditional and fixed already. These verses are about Israelites complaining to God by asking God how he has shown love to them. It states, "I have loved you, says the Lord, but you ask, how have you loved us? Was not Esau Jacob's brother?" The Lord says, "Yet I have loved Jacob, but Esau I have hated, and I have turned his mountain into a wasteland and left his inheritance to the desert jackals." But we have to look again. He's not a biased God. And if we look at verses 23, we know that this is not about the issue of predestined lines. It's not about whether God has chosen someone to be the leader of that country or chosen someone who will be blessed for life, even though that person might be deceitful. but it's rather about how we obey to God's promise. Verse 23 is about how we obey to God's promise. It is about how we react to His calling and how we can walk with those who are walking on the path of faith. So we must really remember this point before delving deeper into the story of Jacob and Esau in order to avoid any possible confusions that we might have. And to kind of continue on that point, the characters mentioned in the book of Genesis are not special or pre-chosen people that God has already favorably chosen. These people are those who listened to God's calling and came before His presence after the Tower of Babel incident. So the true purpose of these stories, for the stories of these characters, is to convey that it actually is to convey what it actually means to live a faithful life by accompanying ourselves with God in each and every step without finding ourselves falling into earthly lives or things. Therefore, the stories of Isaac and Jacob are similar to the story of Abraham in the sense that these characters are just normal people. They're just normal people like us. Nevertheless, their stories definitely tell us the genuine message of God. So these stories we could relate in our lives because it's just generation after generation. So for example, we talked about Abraham and how he reacted to his calling. And now we're looking at Isaac and also Jacob who came after. So it's a just continuous flow of how those each characters live their lives faithfully. So we can definitely apply them in our lives. So just because the history is, it's been thousands of years ago, it doesn't mean that there's no application to be found in our lives with these stories. So starting from chapters 25, verse 27, we can see that Esau is living his life only for his own sake and that he is indifferent towards God's promise and God's words. We can see this through the story of how Esau sells his birthright as an elder son to Jacob for some bread and some lentil stew. Again, this verse is not to be misunderstood by thinking that Jacob is a filthy and just a cheap person. Hebrews chapter 12 verse 16 states, "See that no one is sexually immoral or is godless like Esau, who for a single meal sold his inheritance rights as the oldest son." So the main point of the second half of chapter 25 is that Jacob was a person who continued the faithful life that Abraham and Isaac had by having a profound interest in God's promise. On the other hand, Esau follows the unfaithful life of Lot and Lot's daughters and Ishmael by not showing a great interest in God's presence and work. Therefore, in order to not confuse ourselves with the later stories, we must remember these points. Thus, when we're reading chapter 25, again, we must have these broad points and big picture in our minds. Otherwise, we will definitely misapprehend that God has pre-chosen His people, such as Jacob, Abraham, and Isaac, and that these people, these characters, regardless of their incompetency, will be successful because God has specially chosen them. This is a very dangerous misconception to have. In a different perspective, this message is rather encouraging to us because God will work with any one of us, regardless of how incompetent we may be. Just like how He used Abraham and Isaac, who both lack skills and knowledge, who are definitely not competent, but regardless, He still used them, and God may still use any one of us for who we are. So let's reflect on our lives. Are we just being lazy, not answering to His callings? Or are we trying to live a faithful life like Jacob and Abraham and Isaac? So at this time, I would just like to encourage it to you guys that we may make a lot of mistakes and we may seem so incompetent and helpless, but just be encouraged that God will use even you for who you are. He's not gonna judge you for being incompetent as long as you react to His calling. So we may have an image of Jacob as a deceiver or a trickster, but that image may change if we look at verse 27. Chapter 25, verse 27 states, "The boys grew up, and Esau became a skillful hunter, a man of the open country, while Jacob was a quiet man, staying among the tents." So this verse describes Jacob as a quiet man. If we translate this from a Hebrew dictionary, we can see that it means blamelessness, integrity, and innocence. From this, we can know that Jacob is someone with integrity, and he strived for an honest life. We have to remember that. Being a quiet man meant he was a person with integrity, and he strived for an honest life. It is an inevitable fact that Jacob has made many silly mistakes and could be seen as a self-centered person because he tried to fool his father and tried to fool his brother, older brother. But one thing to remember, the most important thing to remember about Jacob is that he reacted to God's calling with faith. So therefore, we can look at verse 34 that talks about how Esau sold his birthright to Jacob for some lentil stew and for some bread. When we look at this verse, we need to focus less on Jacob and focus more on Esau's attitude and heart here. We can see that Esau had no interest in reacting to God's promise. Rather, he only cared about satisfying his own selfish needs and for earthly pleasure. I mean, just think about it. He sold his birthright, which was probably the most important thing back then, for some bread and for some lentil soup. It just shows how indifferent he was towards God's calling. So in our lives, it might be not that extreme of selling our birthrights, but I mean, we might be able to apply this in our lives where we have sold something, where we have not care about the God's words and tried and many times ignore God's calling for something totally irrelevant to His calling or to His for His purpose. So we can see that the Bible talks about the birthright of the eldest son in many occasions. The Bible views the privilege of the eldest birthright as two things. First, it gives you the succession over the rights that your father had. Second, after your father passes away, you have the privilege of receiving the possessions or the assets of your father. So it's very common to see these days. This is very important because you see family fighting over inheritance and your parents' assets. So it's a big privilege back then to have this. But Esau pretty much sold it off for some lentil soup. The stories in the Bible tells us that possessing a birthright as an eldest son is not the important, it's not the most important thing. Because we can see that many characters in the Bible don't get to enjoy this kind of privilege. In many times, God has definitely protected and respected the birthright of the eldest son. However, we can also see that God has gave a greater weight on those who try to live a faithful life rather than just relying on the title itself. In some, it is not the title, but it's more about people who have faith in God and those who obey to His commands and react when God calls on them. This is more important than having that title right as the eldest son. So again, to reiterate this very important point, it's not about the title of the bird drive. It could be important, but just like how Esau was not blessed by God because of his actions, Jacob, in the other hand, even though he didn't prima facie or even just looking at it, was not privileged, was not granted with this kind of privilege. He was able to get God's blessing at the end because he came to God. He answered to God's calling. And this is the point to take away for us from today's sermon. So Isaac and Jacob were not the eldest sons in the family line again. However, they have received God's blessing, not because God has shown favoritism on them, but because they voluntarily and independently lived a faithful life by trying to fulfill God's promise. On the other hand, Esau were the opposite of Jacob and Isaac. He even tried to kill his brother at one point when he realized his privilege has been taken away by Jacob from his own very brother. It seems like Esau in the modern world would have been a very popular guy that everyone likes. However, he's also a typical guy who wouldn't care about God's promise and work because he only reacts to the things that he sees and feels and who wanted to satisfy his own selfish needs. So the message here is that we shouldn't react to the things that we see or that we feel, that we like, that will just satisfy our hunger, let's say, like what happened to Esau here. So pastor is describing Esau as a Gangnam style, while Jacob is from some countryside. So it's like one of those ironic situations where someone might be well off at the moment. He might be looking flashy. He might live a very pleasant life at the moment, but at the end, that person might just end up like Esau if he doesn't react to God's calling. So as you can see the pictures up in the PowerPoint, they look exactly the same. It's amazing to see how these two twins are completely opposite of each other, given the fact that they lived together for 15 years under the wings of their father, Isaac, and grandfather, Abraham, and received the same education about how to live a faithful life. In addition, we can infer that Esau and Jacob will be a very similar looking, like the picture on the PowerPoint. But when Isaac touches Jacob, he genuinely believed that it was Esau because of how much fur he had on his body. So, to be honest, there is no like difference between them because they grew up in the same family home. They got the same kind of education, but it's just amazing. It's interesting to see how these two characters, these two twin brothers, go on completely different directions. And this is a message that God is giving us today. And we must try to compare ourselves to see whether we're walking on the path that Jacob has walked on, or walking on the path that Esau has walked on. So let's not forget the fact that we don't live by sight or how we feel at instant moments in our lives. But as a true Christian and a true follower of Jesus Christ, we live by faith and by his promise for us. In other words, we live with the spiritual sensitivity, not with the earthly sensitivity. So let us really try to see and believe in his promise and try to live faithfully each and every day. Now, shifting gears here. Now moving on to chapter 26. Isaac's story continue where at the moment there's a famine in the land. So Isaac goes to the nation of Egypt. So this is very similar to what happened during Abraham's time. So it was very common during this time for people to go to Egypt to find food, as Egypt never ran out of food there. So on their way to Egypt, they first arrived at Gerar, where God reached out to Isaac and said, "Hey Isaac, do not go down to Egypt. live on the land where I tell you to live. The condition for Isaac staying in Gerar is that God has promised Isaac that if he obeys to stay, then he will fulfill the promise that he has made to Abraham, which was to bless his people and the Israelites. But note here that God has never said this to Abraham during his journey, but he does so during Isaac's journey. So we can again witness that Isaac didn't automatically live a pleasant life merely because Abraham was his father, but rather he willfully on his own tried to live a life and tried to embrace God's promise and his words. Therefore, God is not the God who shows favoritism, but rather he loves and blesses those who react to his calling. And this applies to everyone, every one of us. So you'd be foolish to think that Abraham's faith has saved Isaac. In reality, it was Isaac who, on his own, saved himself by continuing to live as God's faithful servant. It's not because of his father, Abraham. Of course, it's a privilege to be born under Abraham because Isaac probably received a priceless education from his father. However, this privilege ends as just a privilege. It is meaningless if we can utilize this privilege by reacting to God's calling and obeying to his words, as we have clearly witnessed through the comparisons of Jacob and Esau. So lastly, last point that we're going to focus on today's sermon is verse 5. It gives us another useful insight to Abraham's life. It says, because Abraham obeyed me and kept my requirements, my commands, my decrees, and my laws. It is true that this verse doesn't explicitly state everything that God has said to Abraham. However, it seems like God has told Abraham about his laws and commands. It is likely that the details are disclosed in the laws mentioned in Mount Sinai. Therefore, we can infer that God has told about his laws and commands to many characters for generations, but Abraham was the special character that actually listened and obeyed to them. Because again, verse 5, it says, because Abraham obeyed me and kept my requirements, my commands, and my decrees and my laws, there must be so many characters within that generation that God has told about these laws, like about his laws and commands. But God specifically mentions Abraham, how he listened to him and he obeyed to those commands. As we can see here, God has spread the gospel through the faithful followers who reacted to his calling. Therefore, we must know that spreading the gospel should be our end goals, which would not happen unless we react to his calling and thus truly understanding his purpose for us. Then it must be true that God is calling us in many different ways. He's actually inviting us to know his heart and his intentions. However, let's face it, most of the time we neglect to learn about him. We only want to listen and accept the things that we want and the things that we want to hear. So if we really want to know him, like genuinely know him, then let's listen to his words and his callings, and let's react to them when he calls on us. Let's study the Bible and truly try to understand the words in the Bible and try to understand his intentions. Because that's the only way we could truly spread the gospel. And that's the only way that we will be used by him for his glory. Just like how he used Abraham, and just like how he used Jacob and Isaac. So let's open up our hearts and our minds to welcome God so he could transform our lives. So let's just remember that God wants to use us, and he's inviting us in many different ways in our lives. And it is up to us, just like how it was up to Jacob and Esau and Isaac, how they voluntarily listen to God. It is up to us to voluntarily react to his calling. There's no other way. He's not gonna try to control every single part of our lives. He wants us to react because he has given that free will to us. So let's not forget today's sermon and the points. And the rest of chapter 26 is very similar to the things that happened with Abraham. Therefore, just recall the reflections that we had in previous sermons as you try to read on your own. And the last verse shows how Esau again tries to stray himself to a path that is completely irrelevant to God's purpose. As you read the words carefully, I hope that you can see how the story of faith continues to flow, as this will help us to live a life of Abraham. So let's just reflect on our lives at this time and ask God for the purpose that he has for our lives. And let us try to remember, or not remember, but let us try to listen to his calling. And he might be calling us in many diverse ways, and we might just miss it for some reason, because it might be for some lentil soup and some bread, for something silly as that. We might be missing his calling. So at this time, let's truly ask God to show us the path and show us how to live faithfully, like how Abraham and Isaac and Jacob voluntarily, on their own, independently, with their free will, came before God, asking him to be the ruler of their lives. And let's ask that he give us a faith that Abraham and Isaac has shown to him by willing to sacrifice his only son, or by willing to stay in Gerar instead of going to Egypt to avoid famine. Let's ask God for those kind of faith. And let us just not rely solely on our pastors and our leaders, but because it's not them who's going to lead us into the faithful life. Ultimately, they will help us, but ultimately it is up to us. It is entirely up to us to come before him and to react to his callings. So God, at this time, I'd like to come before you with an open mind and with open heart, and asking for you to call on me so that I may be able to react to your calling. Even though I might be helpless, even though I might be very incompetent, it might be the case that I'm not skillful at anything. But let's ask God right now to give us that kind of to use us.